Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cybersecurity Matters Podcast. My name is Christian Redshaw. Joining me, as always, is the very caring and compassionate co-host, Dominic Vogel. Dominic, who is in the virtual hot seat today with us?
Today we have April Sprints. She is the founder of the Generosity Culture. She's just a fantastic person. You know, she really understands and really much espouses the whole notion of the generosity aspect of business. You don't have to be a cold-hearted business person to succeed. So I think we're going to both really enjoy this conversation.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to talking to April. So let's bring April on and we will be right back.
April, thank you so much for taking time of your busy day to join us today. We're very appreciative of you joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've been following you on LinkedIn for quite some time, and I'm a huge, huge fan of yours, and in particular, your hashtag and your movement of the generosity culture. And you and I have interacted quite a bit, and you know, I find that fascinating because, you know, to me, that leads to areas like empathy in business and better understanding, being more empathetic to one another. I'd love to sort of hear your story about what brought you towards the generosity culture and why that's important today.
Absolutely. So it started really young. I actually experienced something pretty amazing that was the impetus for all of it when I was 9 years old. My mother had to go to rehab, and it was one of those situations where she worked, she had two choices, go to rehab or we can't have you here any longer. And the head of human resources came to our home to explain this to me. And what was so amazing is not only was she very kind and just did a wonderful job at this, there was definitely a reason she was the head of human resources, but she took a special interest in me. And she said, you know, I want to be your friend. I'd like to be part of your life. And because of that, because of her giving of her time and her interest, I really felt like I could do anything. I had someone who believed in me, who was so much more successful than anyone I'd ever been exposed to. So for me, she started the generosity culture. And I learned a lot from her about offering value first, and how that can impact relationships and people, and applied it to different areas of my life, did it in the corporate world. And then even when I started my company and I'm accelerating businesses, I'm helping them grow their revenue, make their culture better, etc., I was all doing it by different ways of giving and investing. So that's where it ended up. And it was something that grew organically and was always the way I did business and lived my life. And then I realized that when I shared it with other people, other business owners, their life and their employees' lives just benefited exponentially. So I wanted it to be bigger. I wanted it to touch more people.
That's something which I know you and I have talked about and which I love about that story. Is the need to be authentic and the need to sort of tap into your to being your yourself. You know, often we hear in people talking about their when they're in their corporate world that there's corporate you and then there's real you.
Right.
How dangerous is that? And I remember that from my corporate days. I felt like I couldn't be my authentic self at work. I had to be a cleaned up version of myself.
And drink some Kool-Aid.
Yeah. How dangerous is that to the broader, you know, corporate America, that there's still that need for people to not be themselves at work? Is that damaging business in the long run?
So I wouldn't call it dangerous. I don't think it's that negative. I think it's one of those situations where it could be so much more. Yeah. So just to use a different illustration, let's say a teenager has amazing natural talent for football. They're fantastic at it. Instead of coaching them and allowing them to get better and do more and be a superstar, you basically say, go play basketball, right? So you're turning someone away from what really is their skill in not letting them be themselves. And I'll tell you, when I was in corporate, I was the same way. I was always like, oh, don't be so silly. Don't be so bubbly. And, you know, people want you to be serious. And that's not my bailiwick. That's not what I'm good at. But I tried very hard to do that for a long time. And I found that when I felt like I'd achieved a certain measure of success and felt like I'd earned the right to be myself, it was amazingly received by clients and leadership and things like this. And I thought, why did I waste all that time? So I would say the same thing for companies. When people are encouraged not to be themselves, you're never going to get their best. You're never going to get their genius and what's so special about them. I would much rather you encourage people to be exactly who they are and don't hire the ones that don't fit with your culture.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good advice. So most the audience of this podcast is mostly business owners, and you have a very cool story of your entrepreneurial journey. And the first thing that that I read about you had something to do with blue rocks and getting people to shift their spending, getting your peers to shift their spending from their basic necessities of their lunch to seeing the value in the rocks that that you painted blue. Tell us from that point on, or even tell us that story a little bit better than I did, of the origins and the different, you know, anchor points along the way of your entrepreneurial journey to get you to what you're doing today.
Sure. So blue rock story, I love that story because I would think it was adorable if I saw a kid do it.
Yeah.
But basically, I learned that I was poor at the age of six from another child I was in school with who was very smart. And he did not say it in a judgmental or a mean way. He was just very intelligent, put the pieces together and just observed these certain things about my life and said, "You're poor." And I was really upset. I was like, "Oh, I don't want to be poor." And I felt shame and I felt all these things that I want to not be poor. And interestingly, just made the unilateral decision that mom did not need to be consulted because if she knew how to handle it, we wouldn't be poor. So I went home and got gravel from the driveway and was like, "I'm going to color these rocks blue. I'm going to start a business. I'll have something to sell.
That's so good.
I'm going to take it to school tomorrow." And I told everyone because the rocks were blue that they were magic. And if you had one, you could do anything you believed you could do. And I really also believed that. I mean, I thought they're blue. I made them special. Now they can do whatever they want to do. So the kids did. They bought the rocks. And the rocks were a quarter and lunch was a dollar. Or I'm sorry, it was 80 cents. And most kids had a dollar. So you're right. Lots of kids didn't have money for lunch. That's how I was found out. And who knew first grade was not for selling? It was for learning. My teacher was very kind, though. She was like, "This is a great idea, but you can't sell at school," which killed my market because I didn't know anybody else who was in the market for blue rocks other than other six-year-olds.
Yeah. I mean, your story reminds me, I don't know if you've heard of a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk. But So he talks about how he used to sell anything and everything. And he did terrible in school as well. I don't know that you did terrible, but he did very poorly.
I was just a behavior problem.
Yeah, fair enough. Maybe you did well. But he used to sell, pick people's flowers out of their garden and walk up to their front door and sell them their own flowers. That's how he got started, I think. So very, very cool. So then where did it go from there? You managed to get through school and on went.
I did. Well, I started other businesses. I did some odd things. I mean, obviously like the babysitting, things like that. I actually sold Avon when I was 12. And they didn't, I answered an ad in the newspaper and they didn't know I was a kid. Because I guess I spoke very professionally. And so I got this whole Avon business going and I went to my first district meeting and they were like, "Oh God, she's a kid." We can't let you continue to sell this. And so they actually did let me continue to sell it, but my stepdad had to sign for everything and get all the legal stuff going. But yeah, I was a door-to-door salesperson for Avon when I was 12.
Wow. That's awesome.
And it just kept going from there.
When you and I had when we first chatted on the phone, you know, we were talking about how the generosity culture, how when you're taking that approach to business, or within bring that into a business, that can actually have a positive impact on the bottom line. Wondering if you can sort of relay that story or that narrative that you and I had discussed, because I think that's so interesting. A lot of people don't think that there's an actual positive impact other than maybe some, you know, touchy-feely feel-good stuff. No, it can actually, when you're doing it right, it can actually have a positive impact on the bottom line. So I wonder if you could share your insight and story on that.
Absolutely. So to reiterate, the generosity culture is encouraging people to invest in and give value to your employees, your clients, and your broader community, whether that be local, global, whatever it is. So for one example, I worked with a trucking company, and one of the things that I wanted them to do was really service their clients better. And this trucking company was losing $40,000 a month when we started working with them. And I say we, it was me, but when we started working together. And what was amazing is, you know, you don't really think of a high service type industry when you think of trucking. Everyone needs it. You don't have to be that high touch. But they happened to have a client that really needed that level of higher service. And initially, some of the employees were like, they're asking for too much. It doesn't make sense. And I said, you know, we always want to give our clients everything they want and then a little more. So we changed that whole service model there and started taking really good care of that customer. And what was amazing is they got better and better freight numbers because this particular customer valued that service better than they did the pricing. They were really willing to pay for that. So it was able to turn the company around in less than a year and make it profitable. And then it was able to be strategically acquired for a fantastic number when it had just 18, 24 months before been losing money and in the red for years and years. And literally that all came from, let's take better care of our customer, which was easy to do because we had started taking better care of the employees. So they were happy to go that extra mile. And it really does have a snowball effect. And then it's also very symbiotic. You're doing the right thing and doing these good things and giving value because it's the right thing to do. But you can't help but be successful when you go to market that way.
That's an awesome story, you know. And I think that you still see so many businesses or business leaders who think, you know, you can't be kind and also successful. You know, so many of them are still stuck in the Glengarry Glen Ross type mentality where you have to be absolutely ruthless to succeed, and that's just not the case. And I love stories like that because that demonstrates that you know, you can do good by your customers, and you can be empathetic, and you can be generous, and have that be very successful in terms of how your business plans out. And you know, I think that brings me to my next question about, you know, the current situation right now with coronavirus, and there's so much stress and negativity around things, and small and mid-sized businesses are being stretched in ways that, you know, many of us never thought possible, and the limitations of them are being severely tested. Now, in situations like this, it's super easy to just devolve or devolve into negative thinking or a negative mindset. How important is that we collectively embrace a positive mindset, and what are actionable things that either personally or from a, you know, a business owner perspective, how you maintain that positive mindset?
Absolutely. So I would argue that our mindset in a situation like this is by far the most important thing for us to focus on, even more so than activities and things that we're doing. Because one, coming at this from a positive place and a place of confidence will calm your customers, it will calm your employees, and it is going to be the folks that approach this rationally and doing the best that they can in the situation that people are going to remember, because this is going to pass. As scary as it is, as much as it is for everyone to deal with, we've been through things, maybe not exactly the same, but with similar types of impacts. And when they pass, people are going to remember the way that everyone acted. So for example, one retailer that I think did a fantastic job was The Buckle. And they sent out a notice to everyone and said, you know, we're closing our doors, but we're going to be paying all of our employees. And I have to tell you that I now want to double down and spend much more with them because I know what that takes. Now, not every small business is going to have that ability because they still have the online business that they can get, et cetera. But the companies that I've seen step up and really communicate to their employees and say, we're going to do everything we can to help you. Focusing on the things that you can do, focusing on the ways that you can help from a business perspective is really going to make a difference to people. And they're going to remember that. From a personal perspective, I take it to a much smaller view. And I actually was talking about this with a lot of folks today. You need to focus on the small things that you can be happy about. And those things are going to color your attitude, and that will be the lens that you view everything else from. So for example, everyone's like, oh gosh, we're stuck at home. You are, but when you're working in your office, you're often thinking about, if I just had a little more time with my kids, if I just had a little more time with my spouse, oh, if I didn't have to do this commute, you know, my dog doesn't remember what I look like. Well, now you have the opportunity to enjoy all of those things and focus on that, because this will pass and we'll be back in the offices and we'll be back to the daily grind, if you will. There are definitely things that you can take advantage of right now. And the more you think of it that way, the quicker it's going to pass and the better of preparedness you're going to have done when things are back to normal again. And other people are like ramping up because they've been caught by surprise, and you're going to be ready to go.
That's fantastic. You know, and the thing I love about that, again, is that you're saying that focus on the things you can control. You know, so many people are still dwelling on the factors that they can't control. So I think that's really actionable and tangible advice for people. So thank you for sharing that.
And if I can add one more thing, so we go through all of these situations in life, and people will say they're good situations, bad situations. I would argue that they are just situations, and we in our own mind make them good or bad. You can choose that, and that gives you power, knowing that you can choose how you're going to view it.
Yeah, you're not powerless in these circumstances, right? April, you do such a good job of putting yourself into your work, and it's very obvious that you're very open-hearted. So we genuinely appreciate that. It definitely, speaks to my heart too. But I do want to get into, you know, the kind of the professional side of things a little bit. What you actually do for clients. I gather that it's taking big things, helping them overcome challenges, and shortening the time frame in which that's accomplished. And you talk about a term called business acceleration. Can you define what that means to you and how you work with clients to achieve that for them?
Absolutely. So for me, my whole idea is that I want to get into your business and I want to agree with folks on what those goals are, what the outcomes are that they actually want to have happen, and then help them get there much more quickly. So if I were to tell you, I view myself almost as a race car driver slash mechanic that is helping you tune up your car and get it to go as quickly as possible, showing you how to drive it. And then I'm going to leave and you're going to stay on that racetrack. So from a business perspective, I have such a unique background and have been exposed to so many things that I can go into a company and innately know the pieces that need to be moved to achieve those outcomes. Because in a lot of cases, the leaders know what they want, but they don't necessarily know how to get there. And whether it be operations or employee culture or marketing or sales or finance, I can see which pieces need to move and I can see in what order to do it the most quick that we can possibly accomplish it. And it's not that the leaders themselves couldn't do it, it's that they're in it. And think about the view that you have of something when you're one step removed versus when you're right in the middle doing all of the triage. So I offer that objective point of view and a wealth of experience because I work with people in every single different industry. So, and you guys can certainly speak to this, I'm sure, in your business. I may say something that seems brilliant, but it's actually something that people do all the time in a different industry, and I've just been exposed to it.
That's very true. You know, and I think what's really interesting, again, is being able, like you're saying there, collecting different experiences and being able to provide that as value to your clients. And I know this is something that you and I have been talking about, is that whole notion of just being a trusted advisor. You know, you're not just someone who's necessarily a consultant, but when people have a broad range of experience, they can really be a significant linchpin in terms of accelerating the business by being a trusted advisor and being able to see multiple pieces in action, even as an outsider. So I find that really quite fascinating that you outline that that way. And you know, I know Christian and I are just super, super appreciative of you taking time to chat with us today. Absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
Very, very grateful for your time. Please keep the inspirational content coming on LinkedIn. You know, we're like I said, I always enjoy engaging with your content. So keep being awesome. Keep being you. And thank you again for your awesome wisdom and awesome words of advice for everyone.
Yeah, thanks for allowing us to get to know you today, April.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure was mine.
Be well and be safe. Thanks again.
What a great person. What an awesome episode. Yeah. What did you feel about it?
That was probably one of my all-time favorites. You know, she was just, it was really cool how she relayed her personal narrative mm-hmm. and how she became in touch with this whole notion of being generous and being empathetic, learning that at a young age mm-hmm. and eventually intertwining that with how to do business. That to me, I thought was very profound, the whole notion of generosity and empathy, mm-hmm. That in what can often be a very disconnected world, when you followed by those values, you end up unlocking incredible magic. And I think that was really powerful, a lot of the stuff that she said today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And what stood out for me, and I said so in the conversation, was the fact that she was just so open and genuine and, and open-hearted. And you rarely find that in corporate America these days.
Yeah.
You run into a lot of self-centeredness, a lot of kind of tough exterior, and a lot of, you know, rigid communication. This was the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. A great person, and also some valuable takeaways for how to accelerate the businesses of our viewers.
Yeah, that and Blue Rocks. That was a great story.
That's how it all began, right? Well, thanks for watching. You can check out our other podcasts on conversationsthatmatter.tv or the Conversations That Matter YouTube channel under the Cybersecurity Matters playlist, or you can listen to us wherever you normally listen to your podcasts. And we will see you next week.